Welcome back, everyone, to the Anti-Media Radio. I am your humble host tonight, Jake Anderson. And got a lot to talk about, but want to have a little fun tonight because, what's the point of this cosmic experiment without a little levity? You know what I mean? So I, to that point, just got back from a haunted hotel, ladies and gentlemen. And, excuse me, it's sort of a super secret, super special project. Kind of like if my soul had a secret sauce, this would be it. But yeah, I'm not going to go too much more into it. But tried to call into Nick's show last night, Nick Burnaby, and he didn't know that I was at this haunted hotel, and actually, I couldn't connect through. And Nick said, he commented, wow, this must be the ghost of Jake calling in. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that a little eerily serendipitous with a touch of synchronicity as well. So, yeah, there's that. There is that. Visiting my family right now, not in my normal abode, which would be Portland, but I'm actually in the mountains in between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. So there's that as well. And what it means is I'm literally face to face with a baby picture of myself. And that's always fun. But yeah. So also it's oddly arousing, which is, not that I'm a narcissist. I'm actually a solipsist, and there's a difference. And yeah, so we got a couple. We have our longtime host DB, a longtime co-host DB Schwartz, who's going to be calling in soon. He's kind of like the Yoda of anti-media radio. And then we have an amazing journalist from the field, Claire Burnish, who's going to be calling in momentarily. And in the meantime, just for a split second, I want to return to a solipsistic point, which is that none of you exist, and we're all big one thinking machine that is not separate, and the universe is experiencing itself as an art form, all angles and moral extremes included. To that point, I just saw the new Star Wars, and what better way to celebrate America than the two great copyright giants, Disney and Star Wars, joining forces to destroy fan fiction once and forever. So there's that to talk about if there's any nerds in the audience. You are welcome to call in. I probably won't answer because, frankly, the system here overwhelms me because I'm new. I'm a newbie. And but I do welcome you to call in, those of you who are listening. And if I don't answer, it means that I'm having a nervous breakdown trying to figure out how to deal with the system. So I'm going to try and patch Claire in here in a minute. And but because I want, when I'm on here, I talk about esoteric philosophical stuff. And I sometimes try and keep myself out of the fray a little bit. In terms of not wanting to sully my sweet face with the vagaries of politics and this vulgar world we live in, I like to stay up in the philosophical realm and in the conspiratorial realm down below. But oh, we got our longtime co-host DB Schwartz, who's going to be calling in here momentarily. And DB, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, how you feeling, buddy?
Not too bad, man. Just
Good.
everything that happened yesterday has now been fully digested and processed, and
Yeah, I think Claire's online too, right? I want to get both of your opinion on kind of what went down with this failed experiment of the Electoral College again. Claire, are you there as well?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. DB, what was your take?
Well, I mean, it when you look at the function, which was to appease the South, essentially giving them more voting power than they had population, and right. counting their slave population as 3/5 and so on and so forth, then you see that it needs to be definitely brought up to modern use, I guess you could say. At the same time, you don't want these super cities, these Agenda 21 hubs, to become the voting blocks that are the only thing that matters in the future. The people that grow our food and mine the metal we use and do all the stuff we need to keep the economy pumping, they maybe they're only 46% of the population, but their voice deserves to be heard.
Claire, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. I got sick on top of being sick, so this is interesting.
Double sick, double whammy. Okay, well, yes. But if I know you, there's no way you would even take a day off from politics, not from politics. You're actually post-political, but either apolitical or post-political, not sure which. But what was your take on what went down yesterday, not excluding the assassination?
Yeah, I was going to say that was really the huge story, because you had the assassination of the Russian ambassador to Turkey. And also another Russian envoy in Moscow on the same day. So what that appears to be is, and you know that I'm not a big fan of tinfoil, but it appears to be kind of a CIA deep state sort of operation in effect. The last effort to make sure that the U.S. still has some sort of wrangling in the deposing of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. That's what it looks like. I mean, yeah. Well,
Claire,
is obviously very fresh. So
you don't have to want tinfoil, because in communist Russia, tinfoil finds you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
find
true.
You. It find you. so yeah, yeah. I mean, as far as the Electoral College, so I had actually written an article predicting. I took a leap of faith, and I predicted that there would be an Electoral College coup. The irony is that there was a small one that was thwarted, but it was actually for the electorate who was going to vote for Clinton, who voted for Bernie Sanders. And of course, they wouldn't even give him that. But I had predicted that there would be a coup, and what better year to predict it in? David Bowie and Prince die. Something else bad happened. Trump, a tyrant, got elected president.
Harambe died.
Yeah. And so I had predicted, I didn't say this in the article, but that the Electoral College would kind of destroy, or no, the faithless electors would destroy the Death Star, would find its one vulnerability and destroy the Death Star. Sorry, I just saw the new Star Wars. I'm going to be dropping a ton of nerdy Star Wars references. You're just going to have to deal with it. I'm sorry. But they did not destroy the Death Star. So now we have mainstream media, the left wing, it makes me nauseous even calling MSNBC left wing. But their propaganda now is, of course, now they're against the Electoral College. They're against the Electoral College. You know what? That has such disgusting irony to it, given that they have been long supporters of the Electoral College, because what it did is it basically made it impossible for third parties to be a part of the system. And they loved that. And they loved it because they want a monopoly on the left. They would have rather lost with Clinton than won with Bernie. We know that. And whatever your opinion on Bernie Sanders is, Claire, I know you lean more towards the anarchist side and are not even, you know, for the political system at all, which I can completely understand. However, you can tell by the propaganda they were throwing at Bernie that the establishment did not want Bernie Sanders. Clinton's, you know, it's a crime syndicate, and the Democratic, not just the Clintons, I mean, with their Clinton Foundation, I'm not even talking about Benghazi, get over that. I'm talking about their Clinton Foundation. That is a clear criminality that needs to be investigated. The entire DNC is a crime syndicate, and a crime family needs its matriarchs and its patriarchs. And they would have rather lost with Clinton and Bernie, and guess what? They did. And now we have frickin' Donald Trump as president. But there's a certain irony there. And I don't know what there's all kinds of ironies that are happening right now. What else did I miss? I've been kind of out of commission for the last few days. So what else have I missed, my beautiful people?
Well, there's so much irony going on. It's kind of unreal. I mean, we were thinking, I think most of us were thinking that the coup could happen and that Trump would not end up getting enough electoral votes. And in fact, the coup was against Hillary Clinton instead. So, I mean, that in itself was really something. It was really remarkable. You have electors voting for, and this was kind of cool, actually, Ron Paul, one of the tribal elders in Standing Rock, and a couple other people, just completely, Bernie Sanders was one, and another person, like, completely outside of anything that was expected. And it was kind of a beautiful thing, because it was as if, you know, Hillary had done her utmost to rig the election on her side, as we saw through the WikiLeaks and, you know, all the various documents from the DNC and John Podesta. And it was as if nothing that she could do could possibly install her in the presidency. And the thing that's crazy is that it seems that that neoliberal, like you were saying, kind of laughably left establishment is still trying its damnedest to get her in there somehow, or to get its agenda pushed somehow. So that, I think, was the biggest irony.
They don't care if they lose. They just want to be the standard bearers for this, you know, reappropriated, demented vision of leftism that doesn't even exist in this country. And they're using their trumpet, their mainstream media, to do it.
Yeah, ironically enough, it's more or less totalitarianism at its worst.
Definitely.
I mean, we're looking at Trump, who has all of the hallmarks of fascism. Right. Like we're about to have a fascist government, and that's no laughing matter. But when you look at what Hillary's establishment politicians and media mouthpieces have done, it's not all that far off it. It just kind of has prettier packaging.
It's kind of an immune response from the military, to be honest, because how beholden and how much can we allow our political class to sell out to a foreign power like Saudi Arabia that's honestly probably stabbing us in the back as we speak? And we don't need to. Rex Tillerson, as the new Secretary of State, the CEO of ExxonMobil, where they are basically defining slant fracking, we don't need Saudi Arabia anymore. Saudi Arabia is about to go up in a poof of smoke overnight. So I think people don't understand. It's a paradigm shift. And Claire's right. Fascism is going to come in with a smile in a business suit. People are going to have great money and jobs for this really, really short-term 1 or 2 year boom. And then guess what? China's going to come calling with the war drums. I mean, we put it off for a little bit. But if there's one thing Trump maybe did, Jake, and I know you'll agree with me on this, if he could galvanize the left again, make the, I guess we can call him at this point, the baby boomers or the aging boomers, but maybe they got one last hurrah in them.
Well, maybe. And you know, I speak to my mother about this a lot, because she's a recovering Democrat as well. And she defected from the Empire, and she's like a, here's another Star Wars reference, like, you know, part of the Rebel Alliance now, you know. But what was my point before I just made a fool of myself? Oh,
she's ready to fight.
She's ready to fight. She actually is. And she, it's interesting, because for so long she was part of that kind of I don't want to say bourgeoisie in terms of like actual referring to money, but that kind of like bourgeoisie democratic attitude of as long as our guy wins, who supports these kind of house of cards, social liberty issues, it doesn't matter whether we destroy the economy with neoliberal policies, whether we destroy the world with neoconservative policies. It doesn't matter so long as we have these pet issues like gay marriage and pro-choice, which are important and not, you know.
But they are definitely abused and used by the deep state. I know we're going to get into this.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The agenda is really simple. It's just, you know, there's nothing, there's no conspiracy to say that, you know, Goebbels or Goebbels, however you want to pronounce him, he wrote the handbook, man, and the handbook came over with paperclip. It never stopped. It only refined.
Too, by the way.
Yeah, please, if you can find one, because well, I mean, imagine.
No, I'm looking it up because I'm doing a new top 10 conspiracies that turn out to be true, and Operation Paperclip is in them. So I might be.
Of course, it is. It's not even a conspiracy. I mean, the main conspiracy with Paperclip is that people think we brought over 2,000 or 3,000. We brought over 86,000 of the top brass, and a bunch of them got away. And that we can do another show. I mean, a lot of them got away before the war ended. Okay, so. We know the deep state is a meshing of the old Reich becoming a new one for whatever that is and whatever that means.
All right, I got some.
Remember too, also that there really is no difference between the right and left. I mean, there are very minor differences. We're looking at Trump, who would not necessarily go to war with Russia, but who might go to war with China. And remember, China is of course Russia's ally now. And if it had been the other way around, it would have been Hillary going to war with Russia and maybe allying with China or trying to. There isn't much difference here. Like, what the U.S. is doing has, like, it has an extreme bearing on the politics in that hemisphere. But the U.S. has kind of tried to align with individual countries, and it's had these very tunnel-sighted sort of vision when it comes to geopolitics, it seems. In the meantime, Putin and Russia have been snatching up all of the traditional U.S. allies in the area. You know, the Philippines, and they've made deals with Japan and China and even, I believe, South Korea and all of these different nations in that whole area. There is a definite power shift going on, and it's shifting towards Russia, and Russia has done nothing in terms of aggression towards the U.S., and not significantly, and the U.S. is, we're looking at a dying empire, like, by every indication, almost every analyst that you can actually kind of read and, you know, study says the same thing. This is the dying of an imperialist empire. Absolutely. And it has all of the hallmarks of that, and we are going downhill, and the last gasps of this empire are when the propaganda is absolutely flagrant, you know, yes. Like we're all seeing with this, like, fake news thing and stuff, and we're seeing it, like, desperate to grab hold of anything that it can. We see, you know, the assassination of these Russian diplomats, and we see these strange alliances forming, and we see this narrative about Aleppo and genocide that's absolutely and fundamentally untrue. All of this going on because the U.S. is not going to be a superpower for much longer, but it wants to hold on to that power, and it can't admit defeat, turn tail, and walk away like the British did at the end of its colonial empire. If the U.S. did that right now, we could stand a chance to kind of recover and not suffer too terribly.
I'm not sure our karma credit is very good, to be honest with you. But
no, it is absolutely not. But there would be a chance for us to walk away, and we're not taking it.
The propaganda has hit full stream. And according to this small site, it's www.google.com, you pronounce his name Goebbels.
Yep, there you go. Reich Marshal or something.
You guys are going to eat these quotes up like sardines with a dash of lemon and pepper. I mean,
what is it? Is it like the playbook for our government, Jake?
It's the playbook for propaganda in the deep state. And there's actually more of them than I thought. And this first one, let me start with a couple humdingers. Okay, and for context, for people who don't know, Goebbels was like a chief, you know, officer of you know, Nazi Hitler Germany. So
chief propagandist
for so something like Wait. Karl Rove of the Americans.
One other thing for that too, to chime in real quick.
Yeah.
The you got to look back to it. What was this population that fell sway to him? They were among the most penalized. I mean, if we went into a depression, wouldn't people do almost just about anything to just get out of that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to think about it, but I'm pretty certain we're headed towards that. And I just, all I can do is hope for the best. Hope that people wake themselves up in time to prepare for it. And
the similarities are absolute. I mean, there's a reason, there's a very valid reason people are comparing 1930s, like early Nazi Germany, to what's going on right now. We have, you know, we have right now stratification of wealth to such an extreme degree where people are basically working as slaves on like the largest end of the spectrum, and others are profiting wildly and in control of the rest of us. And, you know, we're looking at a government that doesn't, nobody's happy with what was going on under Obama in the end, not really. And you have Trump come in like kind of as a surprise demagogue candidate who has so much charisma, just like the Hitler figure.
Yeah.
He comes in and kind of he addresses the people who feel like they had been unaddressed for maybe a decade even.
Yes.
So he absolutely comes in as like the savior, which is exactly what Hitler did. And he's trying to, like, he will capitalize on it. And the problem with Trump is his unpredictability and the fact that he feeds off of, and I've said this like a thousand times, he feeds off of what his supporters kind of rail against. So rather, you know, everybody says he's such an unpredictable figure. And that's because he has no set ideology necessarily. He's kind of an establishment figure.
Yeah.
You know, he's long-term friends with the Clintons. But he feeds more off of what his supporters kind of catch about him. So if he says something flagrant or racist or, you know, kind of insane, which is not uncommon, then and he gets a
really,
good response from that, then he runs with it. And that's what
the problem is, because that's
what Hitler did.
The most dangerous comparison, really, in my opinion, is that Trump has the same kind of squads that would do his bidding for him the same way that Hitler did.
He can afford
that's already
army.
Playing out.
It's already playing out. The intimidation we saw at the rallies, that's all very Hitler-esque stuff, and people pointed out at the time. So I want to get into these quotes here by Goebbels, and a couple of these are humdingers. If, of course, everyone's heard this one. If you tell the same lie enough times, people will believe it, and the bigger the lie, the better. Now, I think that one goes for false flags, personally, but here's another classic. Propaganda works best when those who are being manipulated are confident they are acting on their own free will. Now, that encapsulates America perfectly. Now, this one I found really interesting. Actually, first, another humdinger, and I'm going to stop using that word officially now forever. So Goebbels, chief propagandist for Nazi Germany, said, "A lie told once remains a lie, but a lie told a thousand times becomes the truth." I know
mainstream media.
Exactly, exactly. So this one, it was interesting, and I actually like it more than all the others because it gets into some kind of granular detail that I think is crucial and very fitting with the American esoteric liberal elite. So this is Goebbels again. "There was no point in seeking to convert the intellectuals, for intellectuals would never be converted and would always, anyway, always yield to the," I'm assuming he's referring to the N-word, "and this will always be the man in the street. Arguments must therefore be crude, clear, and forcible, and appeal to emotions and instincts, not the intellect. Truth was unimportant and entirely subordinate to tactics and psychology."
The liberal elite, basically conservatorship at universities has been set up so absolutely perfectly to be taken down. You can imagine 10 years being swooped up. January 10 years will be absolved.
Both my parents taught in academia. They're both a little bitter towards it now, but I consider myself somewhat I don't like the idea of intellects being rounded up. I mean, who would? It's a hideous idea. But and by rounded up, I personally don't foresee FEMA being used.
Well, they can be blacklisted. That's the thing.
Right, blacklist, I think, is the more realistic thing.
Yeah, you don't need to round people up anymore. Just make it so they can't get a good job, and they're irrelevant. I mean,
It already is that way in academia. It already is that way in academia. My ex-husband was an adjunct professor, which is what I think 74% of the people who are in graduate school are. Instead of being able to get tenure track and being able to be established professors, they're working on what amounts to minimum wage, having basically a workload that amounts to about 70 hours a week, and they're, you know, having to just kind of spew forth this bullshit that the establishment wants. They don't even get to kind of teach the way that teaching is meant to be, where you interact with students. It's as if they've taken elementary and middle school and moved it to the college level, and they're not paying anybody to do it. I mean, academia has already become kind of a funnel for yet more indoctrination. It's a really scary sort of atmosphere.
It's been that way for a while. Claire, I have your new favorite quote. You want to hear it? And again, I would hate to imagine that your new favorite quote is going to be from a Nazi, but here it goes. Think of the press as a great keyboard on which the government can play. I know you love it. You love that Nazi. All right. Still going here. Yeah, let's repeat it. That bears repeating. Think of the press as a great keyboard on which the government can play. Ooh, man, that's beautiful.
The bot press, perhaps. You know, the corporate press.
Of course, of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, was there an alternative media going on in full force?
No. Germany? Yes, actually there was, but not like now. And that's the thing. Well, and that's a good quote to bring us into this whole fake news bullshit.
Yes, too. Let's get into that for a second.
There never was a problem with fake news. When that narrative first popped up, and I'll give you a little bit of insight. When that narrative first popped up, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, CEO of Facebook, said it was not a problem. Like, it affected almost nothing about the election. He was kind of, you know, he was baffled at why the Democratic establishment was touting this whole fake news narrative. He's like, what are you talking about? So that was never really a problem. The reason that came into play, there are two reasons. First of all, when you say that alternative media and independent media, who is maybe a little bit bigger than alternative media, when you say that it's fake, when you say that it's false and that it's reporting BS, basically, you're saying that it lacks credibility. You're taking all of independent and alternative media reported on the documents leaked by WikiLeaks. None of those documents have ever been proven false. So to call that fake reporting is to switch the narrative and try to discredit all of it.
Well,
even though it might have swayed the election in Donald Trump's favor, that was never the intention. The only intention of alternative media, and this must be emphasized, was to report the truth of what was going on. Had documents about Donald Trump been reported on an equal scale or been leaked on an equal scale to WikiLeaks,
you
better believe alternative media would have reported on the same.
Absolutely.
The thing is, this is the other thing, and this is something that people have not really discussed. When you are calling this information fake, what you're doing is retroactively taking the Hillary Clinton narrative and calling her corruption fake, mm-hmm. like by design. So this has two purposes. It's calling alternative media itself fake, but it's also calling the information revealed in legitimate documents fake, as if it never had any truth to it, which is absolutely bullshit. Again,
I expected them to take cryptids and UFOs and that whole narrative of fringe media. I would have expected them to lump that into fake news, even though quite a bit of it is not. And I think DB is going to get into that in a minute. But for them to then reappropriate and bring under the umbrella of fake news, alternative media, is just, I mean, the hubris of that is more audacious than
it's
hope.
It's supercilious.
It's more audacious than Obama's hope.
It was always meant to be that, though, Jake. You have to understand, like, there was never an intention to, it never had anything to do with actual false, fake BS reports in the first place. It never had anything to do with that. This narrative came from the Clintonite camp. It was always meant to dispel any any legitimacy for the truth that was there. That was its purpose.
And
it's doing a handy job of it too. And that's you can even tell in Facebook's effort now, because Mark Zuckerberg is a sudden convert, and we have this plan on Facebook to be able to report, you know, fake news or whatever, with the neoliberal establishment media deciding on what is actually fake and what is actually true, which is just the fakest thing out there. This is a plan to silence dissent. There are no two ways about it. This is a plan by Facebook at the behest of the neoliberal leftist establishment to silence dissent and differing opinion. And this paves the way for state-run media. And if people don't see that and they fall for it, because there are fake outlets out there, but if they see that and they fall for it, then we are really all doomed in terms
Claire,
of.
Claire, I've been predicting for months. I've been writing articles about how the next major war will be a diffuse, small war against leakers, hackers, and people who reveal information. It's already
an information war. I hate to bring that title up, but it's an information war.
It is. And Marshall McLuhan, who is, you know, a genius, and his top work escaped me at the moment, but his great quote, or my favorite quote by him, is that World War III will be an information war in which there is no differentiation between civilian and military. Now, if that does not summarize what's going on right now, and to squeeze in two final quotes by the Nazi, and one is pretty depressing, and one is, I think, good. I got to make sure I can find it here. Okay, here we go. All right, so the first is just utterly chilling, and we know it's already happening now. It is the absolute right of the state to supervise the formation of public opinion. My God in heaven. I mean, and the truth, to loop back around to what you were saying, according to Goebbels, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. Now, a final positive note, and then I'm done with the Nazi forever. He says, there will come a day when all the lies will collapse under their own weight, and truth will again triumph. Now, how is that for a little bit of optimism coming out of it? I mean, come on, that's good.
Yeah, and, optimism, but like, how long will it take?
Yeah, can it take a billion years? Yeah,
and that's why they called it the Third Reich, because it had been done twice before, and it'll be done again. Whenever the lies carry too much weight, it collapses in on itself, and the truth comes out. Now, what that does is prevent an opportunity to manage the crisis and the chaos that comes from this. And that's what happens every single time. I mean, look at the advances in human oppression that comes at the end of each major world war, World War I, World War II. And they never end. They never really do end. They just continue on for the last 100 years in one shape or way or form or fashion. So, I mean, look what we've given up. The last pin, I guess, will be just taking away the second. And, you know, once we get to that point, now that Trump's in, it's not going to happen for at least 4 years, I guess. But
yeah, he's not going to burn all the cap. Like, my mom's all worried about certain things. Trump is an egotist. He's not going to burn all his political capital on Roe versus Wade. He's not going to blow all his political capital on the Second Amendment. It's not going to happen.
No. Trump has – listen, man, if you're voting for your self-interests – and you have a choice between, you know, shit and a really huge big pile of shit, you just take the regular shit, right? and one of them is somebody that owns a lot of physical collateral in a country, and the other one's somebody that just sells out to foreign nationals. Right. Who's going to throw you under the bigger bus? I mean, both buses are going to run you over, but maybe a minibus you survive.
Yeah.
I think that the peril here is that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have been kind of underplayed. They've been undercut. Like, the dangers are equal with both of these people. So now we obviously have Donald Trump. And what's coming, and that I think that people might feel somewhat relieved that Hillary is not, you know, staging some coup, or at least didn't succeed doing so, people have forgotten what it means not to have a free press, and, you know, yeah, not to have freedom of expression. And some of, you know, I, like you were saying earlier, I am an anarchist, but some of the protections under the law for various groups, including various religions and such, you know, with a character like Donald Trump, really do serve a purpose. And those are going to go away very quickly. Mm-hmm. There was a very kind of terrifying thing that came out from the Fraternal Order of Police for suggestions for Donald Trump's
his
government today. I can't even remember what they were, but I remember reading down that list like, holy shit, this is not going to be good. And
we've been
warning about Trump as a fascist for a very long time, and it's been batted back and forth, and it's been, you know, kind of derided and ridiculed and such. And I understand that. And I've gone back and forth on it myself, even though I've said, you know, a few times in articles that, you know, this is coming and we need to be prepared for it. Looking at what he's doing now.
The White Rose campaign, right?
Right.
That was, yeah.
Right, exactly. And that's, like, still going on.
Yeah, but it
looking
is.
Looking at the issues, who he's installed in his cabinet, his administration, what's coming, we do need to be concerned as a free press and as kind of a liberty movement and people who are concerned about freedom of speech and such. You know, it might be good to imagine Trump as an anti-establishment character, but that is just not true.
Oh, absolutely.
He's just a different facet of the establishment, and arguably a more terrifying one.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's when, you know, everyone has their issue, sometimes too, but most people have an issue that if called into play, they would literally throw their life down and take to the streets and do whatever. And freedom of speech and freedom of the press, that is my issue. There's nothing I wouldn't consider doing in defense of freedom of free speech, short of physical violence.
I feel the same way. It's that important. Like, when you have the fall of the free press and you have the fall of free speech, that's when you have the fall of all rights.
Absolutely.
Because those preclude every single other thing that you can possibly want in terms of liberty and freedom and personal choice.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, look, we have a big battle ahead of us. I'd like to say a 4-year battle, but realistically, we have a 100-year battle ahead of us, because none of this stuff is going to get easier anytime quick. And, you know, Claire, actually, I was considering writing an article entitled "Why Things Would Be Just as Bad Under Hillary Clinton." I don't know what your feelings are on co-writing that, because I think people need to step back for a second and realize that, except on a few issues like climate change, which are obviously very, very important, but if what you care about is global war and people dying needlessly every day, and it should be, there's no difference.
Oh, yeah, I'd be glad to do that, because I feel
I know you feel strongly about it, and I've been struggling with organizing it, so maybe we can get started on that at some point. I've never co-written an article. I don't really know how that works, but
yeah, it's weird.
What do you got in the works right now? What I know you write, like, you know, 300 articles a day. What are you working on right now?
Well, the big thing that I'm kind of sitting on is the thing about Standing Rock, because you know, there's a lot going on there that hasn't come to light. It come to light publicly as it should have a long time ago.
We were massive on it the other day when you came on and gave your
on
it. So I feel like we did a good job on that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm really sitting on the most. I think there are some things with this deep state issue going on. You know, you have these assassinations that are very telling, in my opinion. I was researching for a long time and just kind of found myself in a wormhole with it, actually, about the U.S. involvement in the attempted, quote-unquote, attempted Turkish coup earlier. When you look at the present events and you look at who might be pulling the strings and who might be responsible, and the fact that the Turkish government is blaming Gulenists for what happened, the connections become more apparent, and they become a little bit deeper to the United States. And then you have to wonder what the U.S. goal is. So there are some things with that. I mean, I sound really conspiratorial, and it's so against my grain. It's kind of, it makes me laugh at myself. But... there are also a number of things going on with pipelines. I just wrote about, there was a story that was recirculated kind of disingenuously as if it was new about a pipeline spill or leak in North Dakota that happened around about 200 miles from where the Standing Rock protests are going on. And it turns out that this was one of the biggest oil spills inside the U.S. in history, the size of 13 football fields and nearly 1 million gallons of crude oil in a wheat field in North Dakota. And it's less than a third cleaned up 3 years after the fact, and they're not even sure that they can clean it up much more than that, even though they've been working literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week since it was first reported.
Cleanup drones.
There's a big movement now, of course, to oppose new pipelines, and it's really valid because there's kind of both an oil glut and we're approaching peak demand for oil. So there's really no need to create these pipelines, to construct these pipelines. And when you look at spills like this that are just absolute monstrosities, they've had to dig up 50 feet into the ground to deal with this oil spill, then it becomes clear why the people are protesting Dakota Access. Like, it's fine if people want to be all pro fossil fuel. I have a problem with it, and I think a lot of people do as well. But if people want that, that's fine. But when you look at the results and the fact that these pipelines simply are not safe for the world, there's a really valid movement against this.
And they also represent... Go ahead.
It'd be one, you know, the only way they could possibly make this something that would make any sense would be if it stayed local and it was refined and used within the community and it really lowered their prices and allowed people to live a much better quality of life in North Dakota. And then it would be good. It'd be good for our national security too, because we could stop importing freaking oil. But if they don't do those things, then no.
That is the exact point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because in order for Dakota Access to get the legislation necessary for it to be profitable, the people behind the scenes, including ex-Texas Governor Rick Perry, had to manipulate legislation and stick a rider into that notorious omnibus bill last year that lifted a ban that was in place since 1975 on exporting unrefined crude. And when that ban was lifted, it was like, you know, just this incredible, I don't know, freedom for all these pipeline companies to export oil. So when they're using eminent domain, when they're like manipulating the government and using eminent domain to take people's property, basically, they're doing it in essence against the law, if not actually in literally against the law, because it does not go towards America's infrastructure, towards America's energy independence. It is purely for corporate profit that these companies are now trying to build these pipelines and export this oil. It's a huge, huge, huge deal that cannot be overemphasized.
You know, the priority of the state to, you know, side with corporations on everything over the public good is, of course, one of the great crimes of our time. Worse than Madoff, worse than Panama Papers, worse than these little limited hangouts we throw. Well, not Madoff wasn't a limited hangout, but it was just an asshole. But it's one of these great crimes that we have legal code being written. It started with the Patriot Act. It will be continued under TPP. And if TPP is scratched, it will only be, you know, taken back to the drawing board and worked up in a more palatable way. Trump is not actually against free trade agreements. He's against free trade agreements that don't make him rich. And that will be changing. But the priority of corporations over public land is one of the great crimes. And of course, this harkens back to literally centuries, if not longer, of crimes against humanity, against indigenous peoples. And it's coming to the forefront here, and we're seeing one of the great fights of our time at Standing Rock right now. And Claire, it's so awesome that you partook in it. I'd say I'm jealous of you, except I worry about my health, and I'm worried that a water cannon would have shot me and hurt me. And no, I'm kidding. It's not actually disgusting thing. I wasn't really trying to joke about it, but it's
no.
Have we gotten? Didn't you say we got a health update on the woman who got drilled down to the bone with the water cannon? Yes. There's a fundraiser for her, right?
Yeah, there is, but she has skin grafts and stuff. This is a thing, though. This needs to be emphasized too. Sophia Walensky, she does need help, and we, of course, everybody sympathizes with her. I mean, I can't even imagine having my arm nearly blown off by the government. That's atrocious. But what has been kind of underreported in the same incident? There was a Native woman, Susie is what she goes by, and she has now lost vision in her eye because she was hit with a what is believed to be a tear gas canister in her eye, and her retina was severed. And at first they thought they could save it, but they have not been able to, and she's undergone several surgeries now. She was going to get help from some Cuban doctors who had come specifically to help her, but she does not. And this is where we get into the issues of Native Americans and indigenous peoples with the U.S. government, because she does not have health care insurance.
Right.
She does not have the help, and she has a GoFundMe, but it has not been as successful as Sophia's. And Sophia has health care.
Well,
so there's a huge glaring difference there, and it needs to be said, because otherwise she's going to be, unless she has an eye transplant, she's going to be blind forever in that eye.
I was going to say, actually, the incredible irony of, you know, the government, you know, taking her eye out, and then now she needs private health care that otherwise she would be bankrupt for 600 years in order to pay for, you know, that. And this is, you know, their recriminations are so paltry. Anything that they could do at this point would not be worth writing home about. Right. You know, the state.
And I met her and talked to her, and she is like,
oh, really?
On several occasions, she, you know, she was in a lot of pain, and it was really, I mean, trying not to come to tears, she could not even get pain pills because she lacked the insurance, and because when she was arrested at the scene, they had taken her identification and not given it back, so she couldn't get pain pills. She couldn't even get like basic opioids or anything to deal with the pain that she was going through, with like the loss of her vision and like this grenade to the eye, basically. And it was terrible. But Susie is an amazing woman, and she was in relatively good spirits, and she was very strong, angry under the surface, you could tell, but she was very strong, and you know, kind of joking about it to a limited degree. And I just, I wish the best for her.
It's kind of amazing that she couldn't find prescription opiates, given that they're pretty much handing them out here in America.
Yeah, she was not able to get them legally, and I don't, and she had not found anybody or any means to get anything to help her with the pain, you know, and other means. That was really disturbing to me because, you know, like you said, U.S. doctors pretty much hand them out like candy, and she couldn't even get them. And the hospital treated her very poorly. The original hospital she went to, it's just the substantial difference in care between the two people who were injured the most severely in that incident is really telling of the entire issue going on at Standing Rock.
Yeah, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. These kinds of imbroglios and even our wars abroad are not necessarily for any kind of in this case, it's definitely for corporate gain. But it's also for the state. It's a happy accident of them getting to show another ritualistic form of violence, state violence, which is for them a way of reinforcing to us the idea that at the end of the day, they have the power and they will use it and they will kill us. They will kill us. They want. They have no problem doing it. They've shown it time and time again. It might not be you yet. It might not be one of your close family members yet, but it could be. And when that time comes, maybe you'll rethink this attitude that the state is not about ritualistically imposing violence on its subordinates.
And this is the thing, too. The police, based on their personal profile posts to Facebook, have been authorized to use lethal force against the protesters there, despite the fact that the protesters there have never used any weapons against the police.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know, but it's true. And worse than that, now I lost my train of thought. Okay,
go ahead.
So you have this police authorized to use lethal force against these protesters who are unarmed, and they've proven to be unarmed for some time. You have the pipeline that is going into their drilling underneath Lake Oahe in the meantime, as if, you know, there is no stay on the order because they can afford to pay the fines for doing so. And this is, I think the biggest point in all this is one situation in the U.S. And I believe there are something like 200 pipelines still planned across the country. There's one in Florida taking shape that already has encampments like the ones in Standing Rock. There is Texas, and there are several other places. They're not all, of course, going through native lands, but they are going, many of them are using eminent domain to take over people's property for corporate profit. This, by all intents and purposes, should be a national movement, and it should not die, regardless of any corruption involved in Dakota Access Pipeline opposition. Does not matter. This is a movement that whose time has come. We have better alternatives available to us. There are even 3D printed solar panels available that cost like pennies on the dollar.
This is absurd
that we're here at this point in 2016. It's absurd.
Part of the defense is of consumerism. They have to maintain this consumer culture, otherwise it will collapse. And in order to do that, they have to constantly show us that even in our social struggles, for example, you notice that when the Black Lives Matter protest was taken to the NBA, it became a huge issue because they didn't want to lose profits. So they had to carefully balance LeBron James doing the don't shoot thing with corporate profits, with Colin Kaepernick and the NFL refusing to kneel during the national anthem. The NFL, and he lost a lot of fans over that, unsurprisingly. The NFL has to carefully balance the idea of profit loss with social statements. These are, you know, these kinds of things have been curated and neutered, and never has the precious altar of consumerism ever been threatened. And no one ever questions the psychological health of a life based on consumerism. This is part of a larger thing I'm working on, but I think it's so relevant to everything that's going on, which is that we live these lives incubated in these consumer shells. And when it comes time to take on real life issues that don't have a dollar sign attached to it, it becomes virtually impossible for people. They become paralyzed in their tracks. And I think we really have to start cleaning up the toxicity in our mental environment right now. And it starts with all of these issues, but at the core of it, it starts with what we consume. You don't like the vote? Vote with your dollar. I know Cassius and us were talking about that a while back. Vote with your dollar. You know, find ways to not support evil corporations. You don't like that pipeline? Make sure that none of that pipeline is fueling your car. Make sure it's not fueling anything you use. And that goes for all of them. When the people speak out with their dollar, it can have an effect. Now, ultimately, we need to wean ourselves entirely off of consumerism and make your own shit. But that's hard to do. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know how to make anything except words and movies. And occasionally a delicious sandwich. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, we have to wean ourselves off of consumer culture. And DB, I know you feel strongly about this, that we have to start creating things here. We have to be makers again.
Yeah, I mean, everything we've been talking about, we can tie in. Like Claire said, solar panels are cheap. They're going to become our roof soon. And everyone's going to have a 3D printer and an electric car. And we're going to pull ourselves off this. Everything we're seeing now is just a reaction to that inevitability. They're trying so hard to continue this gravy train with war and with oil. Those two things are synonymous. Without oil, there is no war. Once we get off the oil teat, there is no war. Once we stop fighting, the whole world will stop fighting, I promise. Well, then we're going to reach...
You're right.
We're going to reach for the stars once we stop fighting, man. It's as simple as that.
And you are quite literally correct with that. But it's the same with tobacco and petroleum. They're just literally weaning the last billions of dollars off of people with cigarettes.
Next up is a carbon tax. They made a decision. They thought World War III would be the way to go. They realized they couldn't win. Next up, carbon tax.
Well, yeah, there's that. All right, everyone, be good to each other. May the force be with you. Thank you, Claire and DP, as always. Brilliant thoughts tonight. Have fun. Have fun before it ends. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.